This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to it. The Gardening Show is on. As you heard, the phone lines are open. Please give us a call if you have a question. And you can send us an email, garden@wesb.com. And here he is, without further ado, Master Gardener Bob Harris.
Good morning, Igor.
Good morning.
I'm going to talk about vegetables today, but I want to start out with a little story. Okay. And this may relate to a few people like myself. A few years ago, I had an elderly man that wanted an apple tree. And of course, all we had was young apple trees. But he realized that it would be years before he could pick an apple. So it really struck me that he said it was something he always wanted, was to go out his back door and pick an apple. And, it just struck me as a really, really nice thing. He always wanted to do this. It didn't matter about his age. He just wanted that apple tree and with that hope that someday he's going to go out there and pick an apple right off his own tree. So I don't know. I just think about that quite often. I think it's just a great, great story. And so it just relates to everybody. You know, trees grow real slow, but it's never, never too late to plant that tree or that small shrub and wait for it to grow.
What's on average? How many years do you generally have to wait till you get an apple that you can actually eat?
On average, you know, if you get a 5-foot tall tree, you just may get one or two apples that first year, but if you wait two years, you know, 3 years, you're going to have a decent crop.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a dozen apples, but then, you know, 10 years down the road, you may pick a bushel.
Bushel?
Yeah.
Okay. And how many is a bushel?
Oh, how many apples in a bushel? A whole lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Enough to eat and make applesauce.
Ooh.
Or a pie.
Ooh. Oh, now we're getting somewhere. All right. Well, what do you have on the agenda today?
So I wanted to talk about vegetables, and I'll start out with the tomato plant. That's the most popular vegetable plant in the garden. And I wanted to really stress on a good planting procedure for the tomato plant. And this is about the size. Are we?
No, I'm not online yet on Facebook, but we will be.
Okay.
So give me about a couple minutes here. They have a whole long login process now.
Okay.
Of course, they always change it every time.
So let me talk about something else until I can show the people, okay?
Yeah, sure, okay.
Another thing, a hint that I wanted to share with if you do have a garden and we got a lot of rain and it's always wet, and your plants are suffering from that, couple things you can do. One thing I always do is scratch the surface of the soil. The soil can develop an invisible layer of bacteria and fungus on it. That's not harmful, but it does block the exchange of air and evaporated water out of the soil, so it can slow up that process. So I always like to scratch the soil from time to time to keep that exchange of gases out of the soil and back into the soil. But one other thing you can do too is hydrogen peroxide. That is basically liquid oxygen.
Oh, wow.
And you know, you've always heard me say that plants need air as much as they need water. And this is a good way to supply it. You know, after your soil has sat there wet, waterlogged for a while, all the oxygen is out of it. And so the plants can't absorb that oxygen out of the soil, just like they absorb it out of the air, too. But your roots need oxygen, too. So mix a little hydrogen peroxide in water. Even if your soil is wet, you're still going to water it with this hydrogen peroxide. And it'll give a nice boost of oxygen right to the roots, and that plant should perk up from that. So that's just a hint there.
Do we have to worry about overdoing it? Can you hydrogen peroxide it to death?
Yeah, you can. Too much oxygen, just like us. Too much oxygen isn't good. So mix it, and you know, you want to mix it one-third hydrogen peroxide, two-thirds water, okay. Around there, somewhere around there. You don't have to be real specific about it, but in your watering can, give a couple glug, glug, glugs in there, and that should be enough. And if it doesn't show signs, you know, you may want to repeat it in a few days, and that will get that oxygen back there into the soil and help that plant out. So that's a couple different ways to help them waterlogged soils, which we can have this time of year.
And remember, if you have a question for Bob, please give us a phone call. We're live, 814-368-9372. That's 814-368-9372.
So, can I start the tomato planting?
You can start anything you'd like, Bob.
Most of the tomatoes you buy right now are going to be nice and tall like this, about a foot tall. This one in particular is a Dubois tomato. And so I better say a little bit about that. There's only one place on earth you can get a Dubois tomato, and that's Graham's Greenhouse. And I wanted to mention them, you know, great place to get plants. We're lucky to have Graham's Greenhouse and Proper's Greenhouse out West Washington. Two great places that sell really high quality plants, and they're cared for every day so that when you buy a plant, it's not all stressed out. So a Dubois tomato, like any other tomato plant, you want to dig a trench. If you look real close, you'll see on the stem.
We're live on Facebook, by the way.
Okay.
Facebook.com/WESB1075, so you can see the plant that he's holding up here.
Yeah. Look at the stem of a tomato plant, and you'll see lots of hairs sticking out down at the base.
Yeah, it's fuzzy.
Yeah. Those can develop into roots if they're put underground. And the more roots you can develop to your tomato plant, the stronger your plant is going to be, and the more productive it'll be. So we want to dig a trench and lay it down in that trench. Now, this is in a 4-inch pot, so I'm going to have to at least dig a trench 5-6 inches deep.
Mm, okay.
And then we're going to lay it down in the trench. And then we can start to cover it up so that even more than half of it can be under there. Now, a lot of places are going to say, then you bend the tip up. Well, by bending the tip, you can break a lot of the cells there. So don't worry about bending it up. It's going to do that itself in just a few days. And it won't harm the plant that way. So plant it down in the trench. It'll be sticking out at an angle, you know, for that first day or two. Cover it over. Kind of press the soil down so there's good contact. Water it real well. And then the plant, after a few days, will all of a sudden tip up that part that isn't under the soil. And the rest of the stem will start developing roots, and you'll have a nice, strong tomato plant. So that's the most recommended way to do that. Now, I've experimented myself, and there's no science to this, but if I experimented myself, I said, well, maybe if I just plant it way down deep straight up, it'll develop roots on there, which it will. But the roots that are already there are way deep in the soil, maybe 6-8 inches deep, maybe even a foot deep. That's in getting close to that area where there's not a lot of oxygen. So those roots really don't develop, but the roots up on the higher stem will. So I don't recommend doing it that way. Really put it on in a trench on its side.
Wow.
It'll come up straight, and you'll have a great tomato plant.
See, things like that. You learn on The Gardening Show with a Master Gardener from experience. You won't get that in every textbook, will
what?
You?
No, you won't. And it bugs me when I see on TV and they say, bend the stem up. Don't do that. Don't bend that stem up.
Yeah, because you can break it.
Yeah, you can break it. Or you'll stretch a lot of those cells in there to the point where they're not viable anymore.
We have a phone call. Let's go right to it. 368-WESB, 814-368-9372. Good morning. You're on The Gardening Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to get back to the apple trees, if I could, a little bit.
Sure.
I had a couple apple trees, and I didn't realize there's more work to them than what I thought. I had an elderly gentleman that was a neighbor, very wise man. He says, you should prune them trees probably once a year, take all the sucklings off, and then whatever your branch you do cut off, he says you should seal them with something. And always do it in the fall, because that's when all the sap runs to the bottom. Is that correct?
Almost.
Well, I'll take it.
Okay. I never seal a wound on a tree or a shrub. They're better off air drying, just like you. If you put a Band-Aid on a cut on your finger, It may take a week to heal. If you don't put a Band-Aid but keep it clean, it'll heal in a couple days.
I was under the impression, do it in the fall, so that would give it time to dry up, correct?
Yeah, fall is the best time, really. Winter time is the best time to prune an apple tree.
Okay.
Then there are no pathogens like fungus and diseases in the air, so you're safe then to make that cut with no problem at all.
I was going to say, if I remember right, this has been years ago, I think I might have sprayed them or told I should spray them. Should you?
No, that all depends on you. You know, if you want that pretty apple and a lot of them, then spraying them with a fungicide and an insecticide at the correct time is very beneficial. But also think about some of those wild apple trees growing out in the forest that produce a ton of apples. And they may be a little ugly, bumpy, and spots on them, but they're... none of that is going to bother you. As a matter of fact, they're probably a little bit more healthy for you to eat than the ones that have been sprayed and fungicided. So it's just a matter of what you really want out of it.
Okay.
To me, myself, you know, I like a pretty apple, but I don't spray mine. If it has bumps and spots on it, that's fine. I know that all I'm ingesting is what nature meant me to ingest.
Now, I was told at one time, and it could be partially true, the reason why you had apple trees growing around a leaf is because the guy would take an apple in his lunch and throw the core out in the ground, and it would eventually grow an apple.
Yeah, that's true.
Could that be any truth?
Yep, that is true.
Okay. Yep. Well, hey, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I enjoy your show.
Oh, thanks.
All right, you have a great day, and we have an email here from Ann Campagnati. There you go. I probably butchered your name. I'm sorry, Ann. Says, good morning, Bob. I'm wondering when is the best time of the year to trim my flowering crabapple tree and a rhododendron bush.
Okay. Now, I just said that winter is the best time to prune the apples. It is really the best time to trim your crab apple too, because it is a fruiting tree too. But a lot of us don't want to do that in the middle of winter. I'm talking about January, February.
Yeah, it's a convenience factor there.
So when it's done flowering, as soon as it's done flowering, and you got a few weeks after it's done flowering, that's the best time to prune that crab apple. I'll go on now to the rhododendron, and I wanted to talk about this today anyhow, because a lot of the rhododendrons are blooming. That is key for the rhododendron, to prune it right after it's done blooming, when that last blossom has fallen off. And you've got a couple weeks there, maybe even up to four, because when it's done blooming, it's going to start a regrowth. And that regrowth is going to have next year's buds or blossoms on it. So if you prune it right away, you know, and don't wait, you'll be insured of good growth for a number of reasons, but also it will blossom again next year with no trouble. Now, when I said good growth, usually wherever you trim a rhododendron, that one branch now becomes two branches. buds will come out. They're called adventitious buds. They're hidden under the bark. You can't even see them. But as soon as you prune, just below that pruning cut, buds will appear out of the bark, and that becomes your new leaves and flower bud, too.
Wow, that's really neat.
So it's extremely important, if you want it to bloom every year, that you prune it right after it's done blooming. And like I said, I don't mean the day after. You know, you've got a couple weeks there. But it's important to do that. Because first, as soon as it's done blooming, it's going to take a little rest because that took a lot of energy out of it. And the roots are going to try to absorb more energy. And then it'll start that regrowth again. Important to prune it at the right time. Now, if you don't get to that time, you're not going to kill the plant.
Yeah, you're not out of luck completely.
Yeah, you're not going to kill the plant by pruning it any time of the year. You're just not going to
get the most out of
it. Yeah, get the most out of it. And it may look like it's pruned for a whole year then. But if it needs it, you know, I was always taught that the best time to prune something is when you're ready.
Yeah, there you go.
and so that's usually how it goes at my house, too. Sometimes we just don't get a chance to prune it at that exact proper time. But believe me, you're not going to harm it. And keep this in mind, too, especially with the rhododendrons. If it's growing underneath a window and all of a sudden it's blocking the window a bit, and you prune it to just below the window, and if you've pruned it at the proper time, it's going to grow back another foot in one season. A good grown, healthy rhododendron is. So it's going to be back up there. So if you want it below the window, prune it, you know, 6 to 12 inches below the window so that when it grows back, it's still below the window.
Okay. Very good advice. I like it. All right, we'll come back. We'll have some more questions for Bob. I see there's some comments on Facebook. We'll get to those. Facebook.com/WESB1075. And our phone lines are open 814-368-9372. Our email, garden@WESB.com. We'll be right back with the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. With the weather heating up, stay comfortable with a room air conditioner at Worth Smith. They have plenty in stock. For your outdoor work, you'll find lots of wheelbarrows, all put together and ready to go. And a nice variety of new garden flags. A big selection of Carhartt clothing has finally arrived, along with spring boots for men and women. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM, where we're just looking at some of our messages here on Facebook. Did you want to address those first, Bob?
Yeah, okay. There was a message about a Jig Fryer still doing plants up on the hill. They wanted to mention him. And boy, I'm sorry. I call him Tom Fryer, up in Marshburg. Great friend of mine. As a matter of fact, he grew all the plants that I used at Pitt for several years.
Wow.
Just an excellent, excellent grower and a good friend. So I highly recommend visiting him up there. He's an interesting guy anyhow. Nice guy. Now, the other one there was...
This is all from Kara. Yeah.
Kara, yeah. She saved this inkberry holly last year. Now, this year, it has a bunch of leaves like this. They're yellow leaves. That usually, hollies are... in the evergreen family, most of them, the inkberry does lose all its leaves, but it enjoys, it prefers acidic soil. So if she has yellow leaves, it's probably not getting the correct nutrients, and it's probably due to the pH of the soil. It prefers a lower pH, an acidic soil, and it can't absorb the nutrients that it needs unless the soil is acidic. So I would add the muir acid or anything else I can to lower that pH, and that the leaves should start to green up then.
All right, great. I think we got all of our questions out of the way. We have not yet. No more emails here, so that's good. You have some other plants that you brought here for show and tell for our Facebook friends.
Another one I have that's very popular in the garden is the pepper plant. And this one here is the California Wonder. And when you plant this, and in about 60 to 70 days, you'll be, or even sooner, you'll be picking peppers. Now, peppers love heat, so really try to get them as much sun and in a hot spot as you possibly can. And they kind of enjoy being close together. They're difficult to pollinate, so when a bee does find one, if you've got the other ones real close to it, it can just skip from one plant to another, and in that way, you'll get a better production. Peppers are a real fun one to grow in the garden.
Now, what attracts the bees to the pepper?
Good. I'm glad you asked.
Because you said it is hard to pollinate, because I don't see a target like you usually see, like a bullseye that flowers have to attract those.
Yeah, same with the tomato, just a plain yellow flower, and it can be wind pollinated or by... when it's blooming, if you just go out there and shake the plant, stirs up the pollen. But the pepper plant, it has just a plain white flower. Bees can sense it. They can smell it. It does have a nice scent to it, and that'll draw them. But to really guarantee is plant some annuals. I've got some zinnias here.
Oh, okay.
Zinnias, marigolds, any of those annuals that you can plant, because they're blooming all the time, and they will get the bees in a habit of coming to your garden.
That's the trick.
Yeah. Most of us are having that problem anymore of getting good pollination in the garden. You know, there's ways you can do it yourself, but better off by planting a few annuals real near or in your vegetable garden. And what I like to do is even plant my vegetable garden, and then I got some real large pots where I can put right in the garden. So these annuals that are kind of shorter and won't get smothered over by the vegetable plants overgrowing it can sit there and flower and help attract those pollinators. It doesn't have to be just bees, but any pollinator. So remember that. A few annuals in your vegetable garden are real near it. This one here is a squash.
That's squash?
Yeah, this is squash. And
I just thought it was a pretty yellow flower.
Oh, And I picked this one up because it has several blooms on it. And a lot of people get really charged up when they see their squash blooming. But then in a few weeks, they don't see any fruit yet. Because the squash, when it first starts to bloom, all the flowers will be male. There will be no female flowers yet. After it produces so many male flowers, now that's the plant is really thinking about this. It's made its plan. I'm going to attract some pollinators, and I'm going to keep them here. The male flower is really going to attract them because it has all the pollen on it. After it produces several male flowers, it'll start to produce female flowers. And then that's when, if they've been pollinated, then you will start to get fruit to develop and stay developed. Now, it's common, too, for sometimes them first ones, first female flowers may not get fully pollinated, so they will start to grow a fruit, and then all of a sudden it dies off. That's a common thing. That's nothing to worry about. You just have to, the timing is important, that there's male and female blossoms there, and the bee, I'll say again, has gotten enough pollen on his body from the male that until he goes over to the female and brushes enough pollen on her to fully pollinate it so it can grow and mature like it should.
I've only ever heard you, because that's why you're a master gardener, referring them to him and her.
Yes, plants. They are.
And that's so cool.
And and it's easy to see. I'm going to pick one blossom off.
Because
I want to show you that if you look.
Show them.
Okay. If you look inside, wait.
Yeah, you got it. They can see
the
it.
Male blossom.
Yeah.
I'm going to peel back the petals. Now you'll see a thing sticking out.
Yeah.
That's the anther of the male. That's where all the pollen is. The female will be the opposite. Instead of that protrudent Trudence,
right,
sticking out. She has a hole in any, almost like a belly button. So that's how you tell the difference. And of course, the blossoms are very edible. So that's the difference of the flower.
Wow. We just got an anatomy lesson.
And also the female flower, of course, this is, again, is a male, tearing all the petals off. The female will have a swollen part right here at the base of the flower. That's the ovary. So that makes it capable of developing a fruit.
Well, very good. All right. We just learned about the birds and the bees, yeah. Flower edition. Got it. Got a question. We're again, we're on facebook.com/WESB1075. What's the best flower to plant for hummingbirds?
Ah,
they have several that come to just check out the porch.
Yep.
And they'd rather use plants than a feeder, you know, to keep closer to natural.
Yeah. Because they know it's a little more nutritious.
Mm.
So anything with a trumpet shaped flower is great for the hummingbirds. Number one, because it's difficult for the bees to get to the nectar, but the hummingbird has a long tongue and a long beak, so it can get in there and get the full supply of nectar that's left.
That's the problem I had. I tried to get the hummingbird feeders one year, and it was just attracted bees. That was it.
I did not
have good success with. So yeah, you go the natural way, right?
Sure.
The long trumpet. Shaped flowers.
Those trumpet-shaped flowers, yeah, that's what the hummingbird will like. I'll give you one example. You know, one of my favorites is the hosta.
Okay.
The hosta has a long trumpet flower. You know, it can be 2 to 3 inches deep in there. And the hummingbirds just love the hosta. So that's an example of a trumpet flower. Of course, it doesn't flower the whole season, so some of the annuals are even better off. And a good example of that is like lantana or verbena. They have very small flowers, but they come in large clusters, but they're trumpet shaped, and that trumpet can hold a lot of the nectar for them.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for the comment on Facebook. Phone lines open, 814-368-9372. We have a couple minutes left. Anything else on your agenda that you wanted to hit today?
Yeah, one more thing about the squash. If you see real close in this pot, there's three plants. And that's really recommended way of planting the squash. Don't try to pull them apart.
Oh, okay.
Leave them just as they are.
They like to be in a little cluster.
Yeah. So squash loves to be planted in groups of 2 or 3 on a mound, even a small mound.
Mm.
All those vines will produce with no harm at all. It's much better off to plant them in a group of 3 than it is just one plant. You'll still get production from one plant, but you're going to get better production from a group of 3 on a little bit of a mound or a hill.
For every group of 3, how far should they be spaced out?
Oh, boy, yeah. Squash can grow quite large and quite long, depending on the squash, you know. They may have to be like 10 foot apart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you can, the zucchini, that's more of a bush rather than a vine. You can plant them 3-4 foot apart and be fine
okay.
That way.
So you can't have any other vegetables near them then because they need all that real estate?
Yeah, they will cover that whole area.
Okay. Yep. Believe it or not, we're out of time once again. Good news is you're going to be back next week.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it again next Saturday, 8:30. And if you missed any of the shows or any parts of the show, you could hear it on demand at WESB.com. Right on the top of the page, there's a listen button, and you can hear, actually, there's 4 seasons worth of gardening shows
on there.
Oh, mercy. Yeah. We got all the advice you can handle and even more. It's on WESB.com. Thank you so much, Bob, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're welcome.
All righty. The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.